Deputy Mayor and members of council, thank you for having us here. My name is Neil Turner, and I'm speaking on behalf of the CAWDB, the Campaign for Adequate Welfare and Disability Benefits. Many of our members are in the gallery today. We appreciate this opportunity to speak to City Council about our response to the Matthews Report on Social Assistance, which was issued in 2004. We fully endorse the detailed response to that report prepared by the Income Security Advocacy Center, which may be read on their website. We are encouraged by much that is in the Matthews Report, which acknowledges that Ontario's social assistance system is, quote, punitive and traps people in poverty, and may I add, keeps them on a merry-go-round. The Matthews Report involved a large number of groups and individuals with firsthand knowledge of the income security system. It clearly identifies the desperate need for change. At approximately the same time as the report was released, some needed changes to the income security system were announced by the ministry. While these changes were a starting point for reform, they certainly did not reflect the entire 49 recommendations made by Matthews. In acknowledging the need for reform, the report calls for changes to the current funding model for the program, including changes in the relationship between the Ministry of Community and Social Services and municipalities to make service delivery more flexible and responsive. It recommends a range of improvements to the way the program is currently administered and offers specific recommendations to assist people facing, quote, barriers to employment. The main focus of the report is on Ontario Works, with less attention to the Ontario Disability Support Program. However, the reality that many people receiving OW would be more appropriately served by ODSP is recognized. We would like to share with you what we see as a few of the key recommendations from this report and ask this committee to move that they are endorsed by the City of Hamilton. We are aware that many of the recommendations can only be addressed at a provincial level, but we also believe that having the support of a municipality in addressing them will help to ensure that the necessary reforms to take place. We also urge you to see that those recommendations that do have municipal ramifications be worked on in a concerted and committed way by city staff and supported by the mayor and council. As previously mentioned, Matthew recognizes that an improved Ontario Works program would assist people with multiple barriers to employment and would be given the assistance they need to move to ODSP. I am an example of someone who fits this category. I have been told by various city staff that I should be on ODSP and not OW, and to that end, I applied in December 2004 for ODSP at the same time as the Matthews report was released. I am still waiting for action on my application, and in the meantime, I continue to try to fulfill the requirements of seeking employment, and it's very difficult as a 55-year-old with multiple barriers, but I walk it every day. The Matthews report recommends that advocates need to be assigned to help collect documentation and support client applications to assist those of us with multiple barriers to employment in the shift from OW to ODSP. We are asking you to fully support this recommendation by developing a client-centered service model, by ensuring that caseworkers act as advocates for their clients, by assisting them to access appropriate services. Key position of the Campaign for Adequate Welfare and Disability Benefits is that human well-being should be the main criterion by which program success is measured, replacing the current priorities of caseload reduction, program savings, and business efficiency. To that end, we heartily support recommendations 20 and 32 in the Matthews report. That program staff must participate in an ongoing training program that includes standards for sensitivity, cultural, disability, situational, and empathy in client services. Tangible respect for human dignity is fundamental to the priority of care. Again, we ask that this committee ensures that this recommendation is lived out in this city and staff who are not able to provide this level of service are moved to an area of work that is more suited to their skill level. Finally, recommendation 12 of the Matthews report makes it clear that the province and municipalities need to partner in order to improve access to public transportation for people on social assistance. Specifically, the report recommends providing free off-peak transit passes to social assistance recipients and people with disabilities. We are aware that a transportation report is currently underway by the city, and we strongly urge this committee to ensure that this recommendation is followed through by the city staff doing the work. In conclusion, we want to thank you for your time this morning. Through our involvement in the OW-ODSP operational and policy groups at the city, we recognize that there has already been some work done on meeting these recommendations locally. However, we want to remind you that there are many more areas of social assistance reform that need to be addressed, and one way to carry out this work is to keep the Matthews Report in the foreground of all deliberations related to the essential transformation of the system.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor, Mr. Deputy Mayor, and councillors. My name is Gloria Wade. I'm not Sue Graffey. I'm speaking for Sue Graffey, though, who was a nurse practitioner at North Hamilton Community Center, who was tending to her patients this morning and therefore could not be present. The following are her words. Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to speak to you about a subject that is dear to me, the health of low-income Hamiltonians. Specifically, I'd like to talk about how the recent revisions of the special diet forms seriously threatens the health of residents in Hamilton. I have worked in Hamilton as a nurse practitioner and registered nurse for over 15 years. Besides representing the North Hamilton Community Health Center, where I currently work, I am also representing a newly formed group in Hamilton, Hamilton Health Providers Against Poverty. Good nutrition is essential to health promotion and disease prevention. A healthy diet, and by this I mean simply the diet laid out in Hamilton, in Canada's food guide, the four food groups, can help prevent heart disease, certain cancers, diabetes, hypertension, and anemia. A healthy diet is integral to the management of a wide range of conditions, from diabetes to liver disease, cancer, HIV, and gastrointestinal disorders. A healthy diet improves maternal and prenatal outcomes and a child's performance in school. However, the amount of money provided to individuals and families by social assistance is desperately insufficient to provide this diet and therefore to promote health and prevent disease. During my involvement in a hunger clinic in Toronto, I learned to ask welfare recipients these few questions. How much money do you make? How much money is left over after rent? How many people does this have to support? The answers were without fail sad and shocking. $120 left over for the month. Maybe 80, often less. It amazes me how families manage, even with regular use of food banks. The answer, I fear, is that they don't manage. While the answers are bigger than this, in the short term, I was able to prescribe money through the special diet program for basic healthy food. The revisions to the special diet forms in November 2005 changed this. It restricts prescription of special diets to individuals with a limited number of specific diseases. There is no capacity to prescribe diets for preventing purposes. How do I explain the impact of this change to you? I will try by asking you to accompany me on a short virtual clinic day to see if I can make this real. Imagine, 9 a.m., my first visit of the day. A three-year-old is here for a checkup. His mother is managing the best she can on $885 a month. The child was anemic in the past and was a failure to thrive. But with iron supplements and diligence from mom, he is no longer anemic. Last year, I could prescribe this high-risk child a diet rich in iron and calories. This year, because of the revisions, his mother will have to wait until he becomes anemic before receiving any money to help. And failure to thrive isn't even on the form. All this despite the fact that anemia is correlated with poor school performance and a compromised immune system in children. 9:30, my next client. A 62-year-old woman living alone on $525 a month, here for a physical. She is small, thin, and very high risk for osteoporosis, bones that become brittle and weak. Last year, before the revisions, I could prescribe a high calcium diet for her, as well as vitamins to help prevent osteoporosis. This year, I will have to wait until it is too late, and she has developed weakening of the bones before I can prescribe anything. This despite the fact that osteoporosis is a leading cause of fractures in older women, which in turn can lead to disability, loss of independence, even death. 10:15, my next client is a 46-year-old man with diet-controlled diabetes who lives with his wife on disability. He is here for his test results. His diet-controlled diabetes is quickly becoming poorly controlled diabetes. He has spoken to the diabetic educator and is trying to comply with the diet, But how do you increase protein, like lean meats, and decrease carbohydrates, like cheap pasta, on a fixed income? Last year, I could prescribe not only a diabetic diet, but also low cholesterol and low salt to help protect his heart. This year, because of the revisions, the $42 a month for a diabetic diet will have to do. $10.50 a week extra. Despite the fact that poorly controlled sugars in diabetes leads to heart disease, blindness, limb amputation, and kidney disease. 10:30. This may be a little difficult for me to get through. A 37-year-old HIV-positive patient with worsening blood counts and physical health. She needs the extra protein and diets the special diet form would allow. But the new forms require me to disclose her condition, and she is adamant that it is none of her worker's business that she has HIV. Last year, before the revisions, I could prescribe the diet without disclosing her disease. This year, she tells me her privacy and dignity are worth more than the money. She'll go without. And as an aside, and although Sue Graffy was not aware of this at the time when she asked me to fill in for her, and I don't think she would mind me briefly relating my specific experience on this important point she's making to you. Our son Derek suffered multiple disabilities and eventually succumbed to full-blown AIDS. Had our son been able to access the special diet funds, I don't think, though, that it would have preserved his life. There is no doubt, and I have no question in my mind, nor anyone here, that that special diet would have given him a better quality of life. 11 o'clock, my day has just begun, but you get the point. As you can see by these few examples, the revisions to the special diet forms do not help promote health or prevent disease. They do not even adequately treat people with existing disease because it does not recognize the need to prevent comorbidities. And it strips down low-income people of the dignity of keeping their health care private and confidential, something people have a right to expect, regardless of their incomes. In short, the changes to the special diet forms have nothing to do with health or evidence or science or justice, and it certainly has nothing to do with prevention and long-term health, which would be good for individuals and the healthcare system. But of course, there is a much bigger picture here. Social assistance should cover the costs of basic healthy diet without having to add any specific special diet bureaucracy. The long-term solution is to raise social assistance rates to a level that allows recipients to adequately attend to their basic needs. It just makes sense. But that is another bigger battle. In the meantime, we need the tools like a comprehensive preventative diet program to help families feed themselves. Thank you, Sue Graffy, RN.
Janet Chafe.
Thank you very much. I would like to begin by saying that when I first came to Hamilton, the first job I got was with the Children's Aid Society. I worked in child protection. I had no concept of child protection. I found poverty. I had read about poverty. I had heard about poverty. I had studied poverty. When I walked into poverty, it was a revelation. Poverty is an experience. You don't talk about it. You live it. If you haven't lived it, if you haven't been there, you have no concept. Poverty is abuse by teachers. It's abuse by doctors. It's abuse by bureaucrats, by social workers. It's abuse by everybody. You are nobody. A dog is more important than a poor person. I can describe to you the first home I went to that was a multi-problem family. There were four children. Both parents live in the home. The living room held a couch and a chair and a TV and a space heater. It stank. There was a washing machine. There was no sink for the washing machine. The eldest child had self-arrested hydrocephalus. The doctor had not diagnosed this, so she was retarded. The next child was hyperactive. He literally could climb up the door frame. The next child, who was introduced as the problem child, the mother said, I wanted to leave my husband, but then I found I was pregnant. And when she was born, I just fed her and put her in the crib. I never gave her attention. And that's what's wrong with her. The next child was 2, and he was normal. The fifth child was an inconceivable failure of birth control. The doctor was going to prescribe tranquilizers, but I had said, remind your doctor you are pregnant. He had diagnosed the pregnancy, but he forgot. I learned a lot, and what I've seen in Hamilton is the city has grown poor. Poverty is more extensive. The city debt has risen. There's no money to deal with poverty. The Children's Aid Society has mushroomed. I mean, I cannot believe how big the building is. I really think that this council needs to understand that poverty is not simply $85 million for social services and child care, children's aid. It is police. It is a judicial system. It is a health system. It is far more than you people are considering money coming out of your pocket. But what is coming out of your pocket is the justice system. You don't see a whole hell of a lot of rich people down in the courts. You see a lot of poor people. You don't see a lot of poor people in the Hamilton Club. You don't see people who are poor because you people are not poor. You never see the poor. You never visit them. You are never in their homes. You are never trying to tell someone how to pay this bill and not deprive her children. They haven't got housing. They haven't got food. They have no education. They have no... You never have to think about how you are going to get your children into bed with a sheet on the bed, because that woman asked me, could I have sheets? I said, I'm afraid not. But your husband can pay for that because he's in hospital. He's getting compensation. I said, the welfare worker will not turn down the bed.
Valerie Stura?
That's correct.
The floor is yours.
Good day. There's nothing beside my name on the agenda. And I never know why I'm here, but now I do. I'm here to put a face on poverty in this city. I should have everything going for me, according to our social safety network. I don't. It took me every effort to get on to ODSP. The stress of that process practically broke me down. I've been in and out of the revolving door of psychiatric wards 7 times. I feel like I'm covered with bandages, but nobody has ever addressed the deeper wounds. I learn differently. I'm a kinesthetic learner. Our schools rely on our visual and audio perceptions for our learning. This kind of meeting here for me is deathly. I'm sitting on my bum brain. I do not stay awake. I've been to Mohawk College on the learning skills program. I was tested. They found out I was a kinesthetic learner. 8 out of 10 of us in that workshop were kinesthetic learners, and I was told that there is very little available for kinesthetic learners. If I was a male, I could maybe be in a trades program, but I'm not. I'm female. I was a very tired child. I went to a one-room school. The school came down with contagious hepatitis, hepatitis A. I almost died. I've been left with fatigue and ill health problems all my life. I've done my very best to overcome those. Right now, I have the advantages, which many poor people in this city do not have, of having subsidized housing. But that has been a nightmare for the last year, because my housing complex, which is run by Housing Hamilton, has been overrun by bed bugs. The stress of that experience continually tearing my home apart while they come in and spray with hazardous pesticides put me back in the psychiatric hospital for the 7th time. I was there for 10 weeks. I was put under the guardianship of the public guardian and trustee. That is a place that none of you want to go because you are deemed incompetent to look after your own affairs. I am a living, walking miracle. From incompetency to be able to speak to you here today. That was last September. I was deemed incompetent. How have I been able to do that? I've had the help of a naturopath. I've had the help of my medical doctor. I've had the help of a specialist over in Toronto who understands the connection between nutrition and my mental health. I have to travel a whole day to get to Toronto and back. ODSP will pay for that. But the Ontario government in November deemed fit to take away the special diet allowance for many people on OW and ODSP. What's left of that legislation isn't worth the powder to eat a piece of dirt. We get very little money left to pay for food. My mental health condition is not recognized as being dependent on my nutrition. There are many people. I will not be one of them because I have so many physical conditions. I probably will do okay. There are many people who will not. I have given in a package which I assume that the counselors will get. There's a letter in there by the woman of the name of Zoe. She will be virtually cut off from her food money, yet she is dependent, absolutely dependent, on the organic food, fruits and vegetables, supplements, etc., that keep her marginally healthy. My perception is that she hasn't had the level of medical support that I have had. I am very privileged. It is a human rights issue, and I'm really glad to hear that this council is going to address that matter. It is a fundamental human rights issue. If I have that special dietary allowance completely taken away from me, that means that I lose one-third of my discretionary income. I'm already living in poverty. I'm standing here in secondhand clothes. I am doing everything I can. But if I lose one-third of my discretionary income, and I'm not having to pay extra out of my basic needs allowance of $532 a month, I'm not having to pay extra out of that for my housing. Many people have to. If I lose one-third of that grinding poverty-level income, where is it that I ever get a chance to get up in this world? I'm always in double binds. There's conflicting legislation everywhere I turn. There's no educational opportunities for me that I have found yet. My learning style is not recognized. Yet I have intelligence. I have something to give. I have gifts to give this community. But I cannot do that. I'm willing to go out and work. Given the right opportunities, I can get out and work. And I can make that extra $160 that I'm allowed to make on ODSP before I start having to see a reduction in the amount of money that they give in my support. I'm more than ready, willing, and able, given the right opportunities. But if I can't eat, if so many other people on OW and ODSP can no longer eat, how do we get up from down? So I'm asking you, please, to address the Ontario government, ask them to go back to the previous legislation, or at least hold the current legislation in abeyance until we can somehow manage to address the gaps, the big pit holes that we've been given to climb out of. We need some method of transitioning from old legislation to new legislation and legislation that is better and serves our needs. And this council can really help by putting their heads together and all the people in this room to put our heads together and see what we can do on this one issue alone. It's a multi-leveled issue, but we have to eat, bottom line. And I please ask you to find some way to address this legislation that is so cruel and punitive to people who would really, I'm sure, just like to get up and get going with their lives. I'm an older woman. I'm 58 years old. I have 7 years before I get Canada pension and will be booted off of ODSP. And I am not going to sit down and take it lightly if I am no longer allowed to eat. Thank you.